Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. This is Scott Reich of Crime Talk, and thank you for tuning in. Let's take a look and see what we have on the docket. First, a Gannon Stauch case update. Second, the Lori Vallow case update. Dark and light portals, oh my. Third, Harvey has more health issues. Fourth, U.S. Supreme Court news. The U.S. Supreme Court says Kansas can go crazy with their insanity defense. And fifth, the Pets.com person of the day. And finally, our dumb criminal contestant of the day. Let's talk about it. Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. This is Scott Reich of Crime Talk, and thank you for tuning in. As always, we ask, if you have not already subscribed, please do so. Hit that little subscribe button. Hit that little bell so that you receive notifications. And please, please, please leave us a comment down below so that we know what you're thinking and questions that we can answer for you. First on the docket, Gannon Stauch. For those who do not know, Gannon was a young teenager, lived in Colorado Springs, Colorado, with his father and his stepmother, Letitia Stauch. Gannon went missing in January. Letitia Stauch, the stepmother, stated that she last saw Gannon when he was on his way to go see some friends. That never materialized, and in fact, a neighbor's Ring doorbell video surveillance camera showed that she, Letitia Stauch, was leaving with Gannon, and when they returned, he was not in the vehicle with her. Ultimately, Letitia Stauch goes to South Carolina, her home state, and specifically in Myrtle Beach. She is ultimately arrested on charges of first-degree murder. Additional charges were added, included child abuse resulting in death, abuse of a corpse, tampering with evidence, as well as violent crime sentencing enhancer counts, alleging that a deadly weapon was used in the death of young Gannon. Now, Letitia Stauch, while being extradited back to the state of Colorado, slithered out of her handcuffs, assaulted a deputy sheriff from El Paso County that was transporting her, and she had to spend an extra night in Kansas while they sorted that whole situation out. No new charges from that incident as of yet. Frankly, that's the least of Letitia Stauch's concerns. Well, Letitia Stauch appeared in court a little over a week ago. Her attorneys waived her 35-day rule, which was to have a preliminary hearing within 35 days. There's apparently a large amount of discovery, police reports, any investigation. We know that there's at least 100 search warrants that were authored, reviewed by a DA, submitted to a judge and approved, and then executed by various law enforcement agencies, both here in Colorado, Florida, and South Carolina. So there's going to be a huge, voluminous discovery in this particular case. The attorneys probably needed that time. And it's not like Miss Letitia Stauch is going anywhere because she's on a no-bond hold. At that preliminary hearing, they will also hold a proof evident presumption great hearing to decide whether she is entitled to or should get a bond. We found out just this past week that Gannon's body was found in Pace, Florida, and the police are still conducting their investigation because apparently, at least what we're finding out through the media reports, is that they have no idea and are having apparently some difficulty placing Letitia Stauch in Florida, some 1,400 miles away. So it's going to be interesting when the affidavit for arrest warrant is unsealed to see how they establish probable cause, other than they believe that Letitia Stauch was the last person with Gannon. They still have to be able to explain how this young boy's remains wound up in Florida, some 1,400 miles away, and for lack of a better term, they didn't follow her, they being the police in this particular case. Well, some preliminary autopsy work was done. They made a preliminary identification as to Gannon Stauch, and there's also reports that the body had evidence of blunt force wounds, i.e. hitting something with a hard object, as well as potential stab wounds, and even possibly a gunshot. Now, that's preliminary. We'll have to see exactly what the autopsy does, in fact, show. Gannon Stauch's father, Al, made a statement, and he's been very shy. He admits that he's a very shy person, but he wanted to thank everybody for their thoughts, prayers, and concerns, as well as everyone respecting his privacy. We will see how this case develops. Obviously, like all courts here in Colorado, things are going to be delayed. I can tell you from personal experience right now, a lot of cases are being continued now until the first part of June. So basically, the courts are being put on hold specifically for cleaning. I can tell you the courthouse that I was in last Friday is closed today because a public defender had contacted the coronavirus. The chief judge shut the entire building down for today as well as for tomorrow for complete sanitization, and they've shut the courthouse down for the rest of the week. But some courts may be having a virtual courtroom where people call in by phone. It is complete chaos, for lack of a better term, because these proceedings need to take place, but obviously there's a public health risk. And at some point, somebody's going to have to decide what is of greater concern, the public health risk or assuring that a criminal defendant's constitutional rights are not violated. The Constitution does not get suspended just because there is a national health crisis. So we shall see. Courts are crazy everywhere, not just in Colorado Springs, where the case is being heard, everywhere around the state, the courtrooms. There's no clear directive from our Supreme Court saying shut it down or keep it going, but our some 22 judicial districts are doing their own thing, and then it's literally each courtroom is doing its own thing, and it literally changes by the hour. We'll have to see if Letitia Stauch's April 14th hearing for additional charges is postponed as well. We will keep you updated. Next on the docket, the Lori Vallow case. Just when you think it can't get any more bizarre, yes, it can. For those of you who do not know, Lori Vallow is currently in custody in Idaho on a $1 million bond because she has refused to cooperate as to the whereabouts of JJ and Tylee, her children. One is an adopted child, one is a biological child, but neither one has been seen since September. Ms. Vallow has not cooperated or told the police where her children could be found. In fact, when the police really started to press, she jumped on a plane to Hawaii to be with her husband number five, Chad Daybell, as opposed to cooperating with the police. She was then extradited back to Idaho, where she faces charges of desertion and abandonment of her children, basically for her non-cooperation and for failing to produce the children. We've talked about this Lori Vallow case previously. You can go back in our last couple videos where we've discussed it. The whole thing's weird. Bodies are dropping everywhere around this woman. Her husband, who also just happened to lose his wife, but yet married Lori Vallow just 2 weeks after his wife's death, and of course got her insurance policy for, I believe it was $340,000, runs off to Hawaii with her, but isn't ponying up the $1 million to get her out on bond. Well, just when you think it couldn't get even more bizarre, Miss Vallow's niece is in a child custody dispute with her ex-husband. So there's Melanie Pawoski, which is the niece, and Pawoski's ex-husband, Brandon Bordeaux. And Bordeaux is making some claims that the niece, Melanie, has stated that the beliefs of Lori Vallow included dark and light portals and various wandering spirits, as well as translated beings. And basically that her children were, for lack of a better term, zombies. And this is just a little weird, not going to admit it, but hey, people can have different beliefs. That's what makes America great. I can tell you, I just handled a case where there were allegations of different religious things, and there were allegations of dark spirits and portals opening up and taking you when the Armageddon was coming. And that's maybe why some children were allegedly starved, possibly. So it was a little different. Now, just because it's a little different and it maybe isn't something you or I would follow, it doesn't necessarily make somebody crazy or insane. Just because you have a deeply held belief doesn't make you crazy. It's just what you believe. So we'll see. You know, when you start getting farther and farther down the lines of information directly from what a defendant said or a victim said, it gets a little shady, but we thought we'd bring it to you and you can decide what you want to believe as it relates to the niece and the niece's ex-husband in a custody dispute. It just is just weird. Next on the docket, Harvey Weinstein. Yes, you know the man, convicted of various sexual charges and received a 23-year sentence roughly 2 weeks ago in New York. Well, oh, poor Harvey. Poor Harvey's had some trouble. You know, he had back surgery related to a car accident, and he looked hobbled as he went to court, and he looked so sad and pathetic with his unshaven beard every day. He almost looked homeless. You would hardly know this guy was a rich tycoon movie producer just a several years ago. But I think we're all realizing how quickly life can change. I've said that for years as a criminal defense attorney. Appreciate what you have, okay? Most of the time, people have inconveniences, not real problems, because you don't appreciate, unless you see it on a daily basis, how quickly life can change. I think we've all seen that in the last week or so now, haven't we? Anyway, poor Harvey. Not only has he had to have a stent placed in his heart while he's been in custody, now he contacts the COVID-19 virus, and he is now in quarantine along with five officers and two supervisors at the facility where he was being housed. So hopefully Harvey Weinstein will get that top-notch medical treatment that people receive while in the Department of Corrections. And if Harvey starts showing symptoms of being having a difficult time to breathe, that he gets that proper medical treatment. I think this goes back to one of the 12 undeniable truths as defined by a criminal defense attorney. It just never hurts to be nice. And I think Harvey's probably looking back at life saying, wow, it probably wouldn't have hurt just to be a little nicer. Anyway, next on the docket, the United States Supreme Court came out with two decisions early this morning. And one, I thought it was interesting just because, you know, having a little issue with copyright issues with old YouTube. But apparently, I guess if I was a state, I could do whatever the hell I want. So there was a case that came out, and it was captioned Allen v. Cooper. And this was a case involving a Copyright Remedy Clarification Act case of 1990. And really what it boils down to, and a little surprising, Elena Kagan, one of the liberal justices on the court, wrote for six other justices who agreed with her. And the case arose out of a salvage operation for Blackbeard's flagship Queen Anne's Revenge, which sank off the coast of North Carolina in 1718 after a reign over the seas that was short-lived. The petitioner, Frederick Allen, was hired to document the salvage operation. He then sued North Carolina when the state published some of his photos and videos without his permission and without payment. Well, what does this matter? Well, what it matters is that the Copyright Remedy Clarification Act of 1990 does not abrogate the sovereign immunity powers of the state. And what does that mean, you might say? Well, a sovereign, a state, the federal government, can't be sued by its little old citizens unless, specifically in certain situations, the government gives you permission to sue. And since the federal government did not take away the power, nor could they take away the power of North Carolina, North Carolina did not give Mr. Allen permission to sue them under copyright claims, and therefore states can now take your copyright material, use it for whatever purpose, promotional, advertising, and they don't not have to compensate you for it at all. Not even a little penny. The case that relates to the criminal world, which is what you all want to tune in for, I just thought that was rather interesting because it is constitutional law, and that's really what criminal law is. It's constitutional law. The United States Supreme Court majority upholds the Kansas scheme for mentally ill defendants. So until 1979, every jurisdiction in the United States allowed mentally ill defendants to assert what was traditionally regarded as an insanity defense. That is, to argue that because they did not understand that their actions were wrong, they cannot be held criminally responsible for those actions. Since then, five states, including Kansas, have abolished that defense. Today, by a 6-3 vote, the Supreme Court ruled that the state's failure to allow a mentally ill defendant to raise such a defense does not violate the Constitution. Now, this case is in regards to the case of James Collar, who in November of 2009 shot and killed four members of his family, his estranged wife, the couple's two daughters, and the wife's grandmother. At Collar's trial on four counts of first-degree murder, the prosecution's expert testified that Collar could have formed the kind of premeditated intent required to kill for the death sentence. While an expert for Collar countered with testimony that at the time of the shooting, Collar had been so depressed that he could not help himself. But Collar could not defend himself by arguing that he was insane. Why, you ask? Because in 1995, Kansas abolished the traditional insanity defense, replacing it with the new law that allows defendants to argue only that they could not have intended to commit the crime because of their mental illness. Ultimately, the jury convicted Collar, and he was, in fact, sentenced to a death. On appeal, the Kansas Supreme Court rejected Collar's argument that the state's failure to allow him to raise an insanity defense violated the Constitution. Today, the Supreme Court, in that opinion by Justice Kagan, upheld that ruling. Kagan began by explaining that Collar faced a high bar in arguing that the Kansas rule violated his constitutional right to due process. The Supreme Court will only deem a state's rule about when someone can be held criminally liable unconstitutional if it offends, quote, fundamental, unquote, principles of justice. It stated that the court must ask whether a rule of criminal responsibility is so entrenched in the central values of our legal system that a state could never choose a different one. Decisions about when a mentally ill defendant cannot be liable for the crime are, Kagan emphasized, precisely the kind of questions the Supreme Court has left to the states. In fact, she noted, the court has made clear that the due process imposes no single canonical formulation of legal insanity. Kagan went on to say what that really means is that Kansas does, in fact, have an insanity defense, even if it isn't the insanity defense that Collar wanted. Collar could present evidence about his mental illness to try and show that he did not intend to kill. Moreover, Kagan added that the state also allow a defendant to present evidence about his mental health at sentencing in hopes that it will result in a reduced punishment or even a commitment to a mental health facility instead of prison. Now, where this gets tricky is because we're talking about what you often hear about in criminal defense work is one's mens rea. What was your intent? What did you intend to do? So Justice Breyer, who wrote a dissenting opinion, and he emphasized the argument that he made at oral arguments. And I remember talking about this because I thought it was going to be a significant ruling here. It says, to illustrate Breyer's dissent, he returned to an example that he had used during oral argument in October, involving two defendants who are on trial for the shooting of a death of another person. In one case, Breyer wrote, the defendant, because of severe mental illness, believed that he was killing a dog, while the second case, the defendant believed, as a result of severe mental illness, that a dog had told him to kill the person. Under the insanity defense, as traditionally understood, Breyer explained, the court cannot convict either defendant, because neither defendant understood his actions were wrong. But under the Kansas scheme, Breyer continued, the second defendant can be convicted despite his mental illness because he would have intended to kill the person, even if only because he believed a dog had ordered him to do so. And Breyer rejected Kansas's explanation that it had not abolished the insanity defense or any significant part of it, instead had simply moved the stage at which a defendant can present the full range of mental capacity evidence to sentencing. So, a defendant in Kansas and four other states other than Kansas, there is no insanity defense. So the defense would then have to say and argue that he never formed the requisite intent to kill somebody, even though if the mental illness is saying kill somebody, which is kind of hard. But an insanity defense is really, it's an affirmative defense saying, yes, I did it. I met the elements, but I was insane, so send me to the mental hospital. That's why under our federalism type of system is that the states get to have their own laws to reflect the values of the people in that community. And as long as it doesn't violate the federal law or the federal constitution, then it can stand. I think this is an interesting question because what will happen now will, since there's only five states that basically don't have a death penalty, will the other states quickly follow? So we have a company that is trying to help us out, and we think that it is fair for us to help them out as well. And it's called Pets.com, P-E-T-T-Z.com. So if you need any pet supplies, give them a look. They've got a big website with lots and lots of pet accessories, from fish to dogs to cats to horses. And if you need any of that stuff, go take a look at it. I can tell you I've ordered things from them, and I trust them for them to get your order correct. Anyway, so we're going to have the Pets.com person of the day. And today our good person comes from Atlanta, Georgia. And his name is Terrence Lester. And he is the executive director of Beyond the Walls, a nonprofit agency that helps homeless people. And obviously in the coronavirus pandemic that we're all experiencing, he was trying to see what he could do to help people out that were homeless and perhaps didn't have the hand sanitizer and the ability to wash their hands out there. Terrence, along with his foundation, wanted to make a difference. And so they put out portable wash basins that are oftentimes, you know, sold at RV and camping supply stores so that people that are not homeless, that can't, you know, quarantine in their own homes, but still need to engage in good hygiene, because frankly, good hygiene is good wherever you are, whenever you are there, not just during the pandemics. And anyway, so he's making a difference. So Terrence Lester is our good person of the day. And finally, we have our dumb criminal contestant of the day. And our dumb criminal contestant of the day is Angel Hernandezito. Now, Angel Hernandezito is 31 years old, and apparently he works for a cleaning company that happens to clean a hotel, specifically a Marriott in Orlando, Florida. Angel Hernandezito was spotted by a security guard who thought it was rather odd that a cleaning personnel would be putting large bags of trash into his car and actually making a second trip. So the security guard called the police, and Angel Hernandezito was arrested and charged with felony theft because he was basically stealing, burglary, going into the residence, a business residence or a residence of another, committing a crime therein. That's right, 66 rolls of toilet paper valued at $1 a piece got Angel Hernandezito arrested for felony charges. It also didn't help that Mr. Hernandezito gave false information as it relates to his name to the police as well. On a good note, Mr. Hernandezito stated that he did in fact steal the toilet paper because he knew of somebody that was in hard financial times and he was just trying to help them out. Well, Mr. Angel Hernandezito, that is not a defense to the crime. It never is. It may be good mitigation. It may help reduce your punishment at time of sentencing, but it is not a defense to say that you are going to steal from the Marriott to give to the poor. So for stealing toilet paper, valued at $1 a piece, Angel Hernandezito is our dumb criminal contestant of the day because he now is facing felony charges. If you're going to commit a felony, go big, people. Go big. Don't go little for toilet paper, all right? Otherwise, you're going to be a dumb criminal contestant, and things are just going to be good, and you're going to say 66 rolls of toilet paper, and guess what? Neither Mr. Hernandezito or the poor woman got to take the toilet paper. But in this particular case, the police exercised some discretion and did not book all that toilet paper into evidence. They photographed it and returned it back to the Marriott. But Angel Hernandezito, 31, from Orlando, you are our dumb criminal contestant of the day. Call us, write us, text me. I will send you a Crime Talk mug for your honors. Hopefully we provided a little entertainment, a little news that made the time pass just a little bit faster. Have a great day, and we'll see you tomorrow on Crime Talk.